I'm Gary Naugh. It's always nice to have you for an hour of empowerment. And today, if you're a man with a prostate condition, let's say you have a high elevation in your PSA, in your prostate, or you might have prostate cancer, good news, something powerful, natural, and non-toxic to add to your armamentarium of fighting it. We have a lot on health and healing, as we do every day. And then we're going to have different audio and video clips. We're going to show you some charts that you have not seen before. And all the information is from peer-reviewed literature, respected scientists. And I'm setting time aside at the end of the program. But you can call, let's say, from a half hour into the program on to make your statements, share your points of view, your insights on any of the things I'm going to be talking about. We begin with the latest on health and healing, a prospective phase 2 study that was just published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients found that supplementing with modified citrus pectin, again, modified citrus pectin, was associated with a good reduction in markers of prostate cancer progression. They received about 4.8 grams of modified citrus pectin 3 times a day for 6 months. 58% of the participants had decreased their or stabled their PSA by the end of the 6-month period. Now that's terrific. That really is important because you don't want an elevated PSA. And that's just one item. Imagine if you also took the other nutrients that are known to make an impact, like indole-3-carbinol, isothiocyanates, broccoli sprouts, and other anti-tumor or anti-cancer nutrients. So, good news. We're happy to share that with you. And again, it's in a peer-reviewed journal. Now also, a study finds there's association between eating hot peppers and decreased mortality. Literally, you have less likelihood of dying. I just came from the farmer's market on Saturday. And this is not a regular farmer's market. This is a farmer's market out near the Everglades. And it's mainly for the people who live in the area. They're open every day of the year. And you see all these fruits and vegetables and peppers. One of the stalls has nothing but peppers, every kind of pepper. And you ask them, how hot is it? And they say, very hot or very mild. To them, very mild is very hot for people who are not used to eating peppers. But it's common to put it into their diets. The average American doesn't have a lot of those spices available. But here with the University of Vermont, researchers at the Lehner College of Medicine found that consumption of hot or chili peppers is associated with a 13% reduction in total death, primarily in deaths due to heart disease or stroke. This was a large prospective study using National Health and Nutritional Examination Survey data. 16,000 Americans who were followed for 23 years found that consuming hot chili peppers tended to, quote, be younger male, a white Mexican American married, and to smoke cigarettes, drink alcohol, and consume more vegetables and meats. So I would say, okay, what if you took out the smoking cigarettes, drinking alcohol, consuming meat? How then much lower would your chance of dying be on top of that, of just eating chili peppers? We know that by having proper amounts of vitamin D3 lowers your chance of death from all risks. So now how do you eat the chili peppers? Well, you can buy chili peppers in any store that sells foods and herbs. And what I do is I make my own vegan chili with, start off with the beans and red beans, kidney beans, and sometimes some other beans. And then I use a coconut oil in about a tablespoon of coconut oil. And once the beans, and I dice up lots of onions and garlic, throw them in. I also throw in some tomatoes, whole tomatoes, diced tomatoes, and that gives it a nice rich flavor. Combining the tomatoes that I saute gently with the coconut oil gives a nice mouthfeel, smoothness. And then I'll take some what is called bacon tempeh. It just has the flavor of bacon, but it's a tempeh, which is very high in probiotics and amino acids, protein. So you dice that up and you throw it in, or you can crumble up and throw it in. And if you don't want that, you can simply take firm, not soft, firm tofu, cube it, and throw it in as well, because it's going to absorb all the flavors. Tofu is neutral, it really has no taste. So whatever you add to it will give it its taste. For example, today I have a lot of bananas off the property. I have about 100 banana trees, and they're always growing bananas all year round. So I'm taking those that are ready to eat, and they're very soft and they're very creamy. Oh my goodness. When you freeze a banana, not one that's from the supermarket, but when you've grown yourself and you puree it, it tastes like a custard. It's that rich. So I put in, for example, today I'm putting in the bananas with avocado, all right? And I'll put some vanilla extract and some allspice, and then I blend that up, and it makes a delicious, delicious dish. Very creamy, and nobody really knows what it is, because you can't taste the avocado and the banana, and it's blended out with the almond extract, or vanilla extract also. It's delicious. Things you can do on your own to increase the amount of fruits and vegetables and healthy fats into the diet. It's also good to put a little bit of grapeseed oil in as well. So anyhow, if you're a person that eats your peppers, and what I was getting back to is I'll put my chili pepper into that as well. I'll also put some thyme, and I also like a universally good quality herb to use in almost any of these dishes, rice dishes, bean dishes, salads, is tarragon. Tarragon is one of those dishes that will temper it out. At the end, I then put in lime juice. Yeah, lime juice into chili. And it gives it a really rich taste. And then that's how I serve the chili. Vegan chili. Very healthy, very tasty. Now, the canned chili frequently has some form of wheat gluten in it. So stay away from that. Read your labels. Also, there's an interesting study from the University of Nebraska. And what they found was that scrolling social media, reading websites, listening to podcasts, watching news, with so many options, it's never been easy to follow American politics. And I don't really talk about American politics on this program. The three things you won't hear me talking about are sex, politics, and religion, because you have your own views, you have your own standards, you have your own culture or personal preferences, and who am I? For that matter, who's anyone else to tell you what you should believe? But at what cost do all of us pay when we're tuning into something every day without knowing, is it honest? Is it balanced? Is it objective? Is it fair? Is it true? Unless you know how to search the underlying sources, you may believe whatever someone's telling you. I wouldn't do that. I would challenge it. But according to the University of Nebraska research, political scientist Kevin Smith said all political jockeying is harmful to our health. And it's been so for some time. And even a change in party power didn't help. So just imagine if you turned off the body politic and all the pundits and the so-called experts who are telling you, you got to do this, you got to do that. No, you don't. I suggest that you start focusing in on sources that provide you with positive solutions, whether they're newspapers or magazines or websites, because that helps you mentally. Because they're saying in this study that politics literally can make people sick. Yeah. Because let's just say that you're in a state and you want to work. You have to work. You're the sole provider for your family. and you're told you got to get the vaccines, and you have an underlying health condition. Let's say you have and have had an autoimmune condition, and your doctor says you shouldn't get this, but the doctor's advice is overridden. You either get it or you lose your job. Now you're stuck, unless you realize there are other states where you could also find work and quality of life without that draconian, always draconian presence. You do it or there's punishment. So that's politics. And by the way, at this point, the pandemic has nothing to do with public health science and protecting us. It's all about politics. A study reveals how triclosan, T-R-I-C-L-O-S-A-N, by the way, that's found in a lot of your toothpaste and other things that you use daily, is triggered to harm the gut. University of North Carolina and the University of Massachusetts both had studies conducted to show that it is precisely how triclosan, an antimicrobial found in toothpaste, toys, and thousands of other products, can trigger gut inflammation. There was a whole international team of researchers led by these, but they were also Amherst, Hong Kong Baptist University. They identified the bacteria and even specific enzymes that trigger triclosan's harmful effects. So just stay away from it. How important is a fresh squeezed glass of orange juice in the morning? I make one every morning. In season, I'll have it off my own orange trees, but otherwise I go to the farmer's market and find those that are discolored. I always buy discolored oranges because I know they haven't been sprayed. And then indeed, they're coming just from the trees. And so that's good. You wash them on the outside, cut them, smell them, make sure that they're sweet smelling, and you look and see there's no brown or black in the middle of them, which could be a mold, and then you rinse it again quickly, and your knife as well, then you juice it. And it generally takes, this morning it took me 6 pretty good size oranges, about this size if you're watching this, to make 1 16-ounce glass of juice. And then over the next 20 minutes, while doing my chores in the house, I'll take my supplements, always the ones that help protect my immune system and stimulate it properly and help prevent any deficiencies. And then I finish it off. Then I go out and start my work. Well, here's a study that shows why you should be doing the same identical thing. This is from the University of Granada, which of course is in Spain. And the study looked at the antioxidants activity of citrus juices and other foods, and said these are way underused, undervalued. A new technique developed by researchers at the University of Granada for measuring this property generates values that are 10 times, that's 1,000% or 100% higher than those indicated by current analysis. The results suggest that tables on the antioxidant capacities of food products that dietitians and health authorities use must be revised. Orange juice and juices from other citrus, grapefruit, lemon, lime, are considered healthy due to their high content of antioxidants, ORAC, which help to reduce harmful free radicals in our bodies. But this new investigation shows that their benefits are greater, far greater, than previously thought. So let's add having a good 16-ounce glass of juice. By the way, you can also combine them. You can use 3 lemons, a lime, 2 grapefruits, and 3 oranges. That'll make you about a 16-ounce glass of juice that's got all of it in there. What a great way to start the day. Also, from Rutgers University comes a study of a chemical commonly found in consumer products that will disrupt a hormone needed for healthy pregnancy. Yeah, exposure to these particular groups of chemicals, they're in plastics, they're in personal care products, even electronics, and they can disrupt an important hormone needed to sustain a healthy pregnancy. The study appears in the current issue of Environment International, and it was among the first to examine the impact that phthalates, that's P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E-S, added to plastics to increase flexibility have on the placental releasing hormone, what is called the PCRH, that is produced by the placenta and increases throughout the course of pregnancy. The hormone plays an important role in promoting the onset of labor, but when the levels are high or rise rapidly early in pregnancy, it may contribute to preterm birth or fetal growth problems, as well as high blood pressure, diabetes, and postpartum depression. That's important. Now, that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, I'm going to give you the final part that I did not have a chance to do on our last program on America's obsession with illusion. Can we deal with the truth? Do we need everything Photoshopped to please our mindset, our filters of what is yes and what is no, what is good, what is bad, acceptable and unacceptable, to be embraced and to be pushed away? Because right now we're living in a very obsessed society that just takes its reality from illusion and is being manipulated and used against its own best interest. Now for part two of America's obsession with illusion. For example, what happens elsewhere around the world can no longer be viewed in isolation. If you ask the average person to stop on the street, go to a college campus, go to a Harvard, Yale, Stanford, and just ask the average student, what can you tell me about globalization and how it's impacting your life, you specifically? They'd be clueless, unless they're taking courses in some form of diplomacy. They wouldn't know. And yet, something as simple as your cell phone, your tablet, your computer, the television, all these have components that are made by slave labor to exploit the natural resources and destroying the environment, the water, the air, the soil, and the health of people who mine them in South America and in Eurasia and Africa. And then they're frequently shipped off to Foxconn, which is a gigantic industrial facility. So bad were the labor conditions, so exploited were the laborers, that they actually had to start putting metal netting outside of the building because people were jumping to their deaths. They had no privacy. They were crammed, multiple people in tiny little rooms. They were worked to exhaustion, and they were penalized if they made mistakes. That is how you get your cheap stuff or expensive stuff from China. And that's not even to discuss, what about the Uyghurs? Now, if you ask the average person, is it true that China actually has internment camps or re-education camps? In effect, they're concentration camps. You're concentrating a group of people into an environment, not to kill them, not to put them into ovens, but to punish them because they represent what the Chinese Communist Party considers an ideological or cultural existential challenge. So they have to be re-indoctrinated. And boy, are they punished. They have no freedoms. Also, what about all those organ transplants? Yes, normally it might take a year or longer for you to get a liver or a heart if you needed a transplant. Not in China. China can give you as many as you need. If one fails, there's another. If that fails, there's another. How do they get them? Well, there's another group, the Falun Gong. They're a meditation group. They're harmless, they're peaceful, and yet there are about 100 million of them in China, and China has arrested them, put them into special medical hospital prisons, and there they are, then organs are taken out. And they start with the organs that will still allow you to live by taking out one kidney and one lung and one eye. And then when they have a need, they'll take out your heart, and then they just cremate you. Over 100,000, minimally, have been killed. Any thoughts on that? Do you think that's an important issue? These are just some of the human rights abuses. No one has any privacy, and you have merit cards, social merit cards. It's like a conformist card. and everyone has it. And it's automatic. So if you do anything the Chinese don't like, if you read the wrong book, if you go to the wrong website, if you say something, suddenly you're shamed by everyone who knows you, their phones will ring, and you will be shamed. What kind of society is that? And yet that's the society that every administration has chosen to allow this to go on because we're doing business with them. We're buying their stuff. All right? And Americans want it. So at what point in this chain of responsibility are you or others going to stop and say, hold on a second, where does the raw materials come from? How is it made? Is there any exploitation? I mentioned on the last program, if you ask the average woman, how would you feel that if something you bought caused another woman in the world to be exploited? I wouldn't like that. They all say that. And yet I said, okay, take a look at inside your outfit. Where was the tag? Where was it made? Oh, in Bangladesh. In Bangladesh, there are hundreds of thousands of women who are literally worked to death for anywhere from, used to be 14 cents, it might be about 24 to 28 cents an hour today. Wow. And then they have to go home at night and take care of their family and make the food for the family the next day and do the wash and everything else. They literally are worked to death. So you can have that dress or jacket or suit. You see, we have a cognitive disconnect. The question is, do we care where something comes from, where the food is grown, how it's grown? Is it genetically engineered? Is it sprayed with some form of toxic pesticide? Or do we not care? It would be good if we all cared, because then we could say we're not buying genetically engineered foods. We're not going to use any product at all that is made where people were suffering and exploited, in effect slave labor, to make that item. That would be the right thing to do. But right now, we're just not in a mindset to care about what's going on in the world. Have you seen a single demonstration against the suffering of millions of children starving to death in the most poorest country in the Middle East? No. How about the African slave trade and wide open in the markets in Libya? No. And all the false flags that we did in Syria and then accused Assad of doing to legitimize us going in there and taking a national sovereign property and confiscating for ourselves and setting his own people against him and allowing terrorists. No. So you see things that are really important we just don't seem to care about. Or have you looked at all, read the articles by scholars on how dangerous the new transhumanism and artificial intelligence and automation is to our society, to our personal health, to our rights and freedoms? No. No demonstrations, no care, no curiosity, just kind of, well, if it's something that helps me get there faster, I'm going to use it. Okay, at what cost? So you see, globalization is perhaps the most holistic phenomena within the matrix of financial capital movements and post-modern social restructuring, which is going on right now. China has the means to socially control most of its population, especially in urban areas. On the other hand, China would be unable to succeed in this endeavor without the direct assistance, trade, and technological development of Silicon Valley and the private innovators of intelligence and surveillance applied sciences. China has already launched social scoring, as I mentioned, a nefarious means to reward and penalize public activity. Conform, you're rewarded. Challenge, you're penalized. If a person protests the lack of personal freedom, the lack of democratic values and free speech, his or her social score decreases. And through digital networks, authorities can monitor and identify every single Chinese citizen's movements. All of this technology is ready for launch in the United States and other developed nations. We're just standing in line, waiting our turn. However, rather than social scoring, it's a blockchain, the digital database that gathers any information and is programmed for. Blockchain has already been employed for almost a decade. At this moment, the federal government and individual states are blindly overreacting to COVID's health threats. The climate and the environment and the collapse of social cohesion is more important, but they've made the virus more important. To protect those who are vulnerable, yes. To offer them the vaccine if it works for them, yes. To look at the rest, the 95% of the American population who are not at risk, and same as a person with multiple comorbidities, no. Then you have to build up a nation's immune system and show them how to live with, just like we do with the flu. But these threats are eliciting government mandates, such as mandatory vaccines. A Biden federal vaccine mandate would overrule individual state laws. The fact that this is being publicly stated should quell many conspiratorial theories. It is part of a more comprehensive and long-term agenda for expanding government social control under the pretense and propaganda of keeping Americans safe under the banner of national security. New laws are under construction that would redefine hate speech, so normal speech would be considered hate speech if at any time you criticized corporate power, corporatocracy, or anything the IRS or Justice Department was doing. Yes, that would now be hate speech. You couldn't even share it on the internet. You couldn't read it on the internet. If you were to read any of the hundreds of thousands of posts from legitimate medical doctors and scientists who have questions, even though they're pro-vaccine, they have questions about what is happening with the COVID narrative, that would be considered hate speech on their part, and you participating in it by reading it or sharing it. So any criticisms, any at all, towards the failures of the COVID vaccines is redefined as threats to public health. People raising such critiques may eventually find their names on domestic terrorist lists. The scenario is not beyond the imagination. WikiLeaks revealed that environmental terrorist organizations, or environmental animal and animal protection groups and human rights groups have all been labeled in secret as domestic terrorists under the Bush and Obama administrations. Guilt by association laws, for example, buried in Obama's scope is far less easier than erasing it from the books. Consequently, it's not unlikely that these laws may eventually widen to include charges of subversion based solely upon the emails you read, the videos you watch, or the broadcasts you listen to. This would inevitably lead to the death toll for many any residue of integrity in journalism. Silicon Valley's collusion, which has been going on for a long time in the deep state, where the government has canceled the voices of some of our best investigative journalists. As examples, when was the last time you saw Chris Hedges invited to talk or debate anywhere in the media? How about none? Cheryl Atkinson, same. Glenn Greenwald, same. Max Blumenthal, Craig Murray, the same. And on it goes. These are only a few of many examples. The new unstated law is that original investigation must support the official narrative. Otherwise, it will be prohibited from being accessed by the public. And we may recall that under the second Bush administration, the Justice Department created free speech zones, fenced off and confined areas far away from any place or anybody, where demonstrators were only permitted to exercise their constitutional rights of free protest and expression. Today, we're only several small amendments away before the right to assemble will be banned altogether. And faced with growing condemnation by many nations, the United States' hegemonic view of the world and its geopolitical arena ever expanding, the respect for us has waned considerably. Biden's administration and its return to neocon foreign policy against Russia and China are pure neocon market policies, and they'll likely make every effort to regain the dominance they lost during the past 4 years. And by the way, is there a real threat that China will attack the United States or Russia will want war with the United States? No. There's none. Because these are now developed nations. They have high-rise apartments. They have a very, very large educated class of people. They don't want to lose everything, and they know that any mistake, any, would lead to mutual annihilation. Because once it starts, it won't stop. This dwarfs anything that you might have seen if you watched the movie Terry Sutherland's screenplay of How I Love the Bomb, Dr. Strangelove. Remember that? Yeah. Well, that scenario means that there'll be a different type of war, a war where the soldiers and the aircraft and the jets will not be what goes into battle. It'll be cyber war. Now, just imagine for a moment. There are hundreds of thousands of individuals every day who go to work in China and in Russia and in Iran and in Pakistan, all working cooperatively in order to disable America and British and German and French and Italian, anyone they perceive, and certainly Australia, to bring their society to a standstill. Now, how do you do that? Invading? No. No, that would never work. Look, in 20 years, and trillions of dollars, and thousands of dead Americans, and hundreds of thousands of dead, and now millions of displaced Afghanistanis, we were never able to defeat the Taliban. In fact, in the last 5 years, they gained strength and took over more property, one time 80% of the country. Now, mind you, they had no aircraft, they had no satellites, they had no submarines, they had no nuclear power, all right? They had no large army, and yet they won. So what would you imagine an army larger than America's in China and in Russia, and both are nuclear, and Pakistan nuclear, what do you imagine would be the outcome? We would lose. But that's not how it's going to play out, I see. I see all they have to do is simply turn off the electricity, disable it. Imagine waking up one morning, and because of the neocons, because of Obama and Clinton, that there was their policies, there was now going to be a conflict. And all the media says, yes, we must go to war. The front page of the New York Times yesterday said, it had an editorial by a person in the potential conflict against Russia and in Ukraine. It says, don't send us your army. You know, there's another approach. Get ready for war. All right. Who does that benefit? You have no idea, all the politicians and all the profiteers behind the scenes pushing this. The neocons love war. They love conflict because they profit from it. They supply the armaments. But what's going to happen when you wake up, you have no computer, no phone, no cell phone, satellites are all out, and you have no heat, and you have no water, and you have no traffic lights, and you have no freezers, and everything just begins to rot. Within 4 days, everything was in a freezer is gone. And then none of your fuel tanks work. The only people who have any power, those who have home generators, but then you have to have gasoline or some form of diesel, depending upon which generator you get, to run even lights in a house. And that's not very many people. Well, how are you going to drive a car? If it's an electric car, you're not going to have electricity. If it's a gas or diesel, you're going to run out of that. So overnight, no plane could fly because there'd be no system of radar and all the people, the controllers, to help guide the flights. So all rail traffic would end, all buses, cars, cabs, everything would end without a shot being fired. How would you know what was going on? You wouldn't. Well, where would you go? How would you eat outside of what you have? Interesting, because yesterday morning, there was a big storm here with tornadoes, multiple tornadoes, and a lot of damage done. And that storm is also going northeast now and will create even more damage. But one of the people came and said, gee whiz, Gary, I'm a prepper, meaning that person, who was our chef this week, was a prepper. And she said, I have 2 years worth of food. I've dried, dehydrated my own. And I've got a backup generator. And she said, I see you have all the same things here. Yeah, we had electricity. And within 60 seconds of everyone else, the power going out, mine went on. And there was no stopping regular activity because of the storm. Planned ahead. Anticipated what happens with a hurricane or fire, and simply was prepared. That's all. The same reason that I plan ahead for my health. I don't take my arteries for granted. I make sure every day I have the pomegranate and the beets and other things that will help clean them, make them stronger, pliable, allow blood to flow easier to the extremities, including my brain. And someone could say, well, that's, why do that? Don't you want to wake up in the morning and have some bacon and eggs? The answer is no, I don't. I don't want to harm my body, and that would be a choice that would harm my body. Why would I make an active choice to bring harm to myself, if not today, at some point? But that's not how we're thinking. We're not thinking preventatively like right now. So just understand when the battle comes, hopefully it won't, but if those in power stay in power, it's a very high probability it will. Just look at all the wars that we thought we should never have and should never have had. But we did, and no one took responsibility for them. So that's where we're at. So unless you understand something about what's going on in the world around you and how that happens, well, then you're going to end up with a lot less freedom and a lot more dominance. And virtually all dominance over the geopolitical landscape is now being inverted to strengthen the federal hegemonic reign over the American population. Finally, we need to awaken to modern technology's remarkable sophistication and its certain threats to the health of our societies, and even to our definition of being human. Sadly, this is an industry each of us has been complicit in advancing. Coining a term from one of the planet's most important and forgotten 20th century great prophetic voices, the Trappist monk Father Thomas Merton, that's Merton, we are facing what he called the great unspeakable. What's that? Well, I call it something different. I call it the great empty. That is a spiritual crisis contributing to the existential vacuity of modern American culture. If you're aware that in his 1964 collection of meditations called Seeds of Destruction, Merton predicted that the civil rights movement would confront a catastrophic impasse and may find itself without leadership. Mind you, this is 1964. 4 years later, Martin Luther King Jr., who Merton had a deep correspondence with, was assassinated. Merton would die suddenly later that same year under very mysterious circumstances in Thailand. Another way to describe the unspeakable is criminal sovereignty, with a capital S, to convey its almost its multiple qualities. If alive today, I believe Merton would look up at both the right and the left, Democrats and Republicans, and see just the meaninglessness of American life manifesting as a turbulent ocean of afflictive emotions and thoughts. Instead of technology serving the needs of humanity, Americans are being increasingly conditioned to willingly bow as slaves to technology. The public, in my opinion, and one of the great essayists was W. Somerset Maugham, and he warned that the public is easily disillusioned, and do not allow them behind the curtain because they will become angry at you. Why? It was the illusion they loved, not the reality. So the unspeakable's unspoken mantra is technology must progress regardless of how many people fall destitute, jobless, debt-ridden, and physically ill, with only suicide as a recourse to escape. American democracy today, Merton observed over 55 years ago, well, it's It's just a manifestation of illusions. We have not the freedoms we thought we had, because there's a consequence to everything you say and do, write and protest. Consequently, the elite, yeah, and there are a lot of elite, sitting in the global control tower, view the Great Reset's technological regime as preferable to democracy's kabuki theater. Advanced surveillance, artificial intelligence, intelligent robotics, transhumanism, 5G internet of everything, genetic engineering, and weather modification should be our guiding avatars. The solution he would urge can no longer be found in civil discourse or the rights of human beings gathering in assembly. For the ruling elite, the masses are blind sheep wandering in search of a shepherd. This is what author Ronald Wright called the progress trap and the unending effort to feed technology's hunger to devour natural and human capital, interest-free. In the mainstream press and the news media, its malady of cognitive dissonance serves as the unreflective cheerleader for our march towards civilized collapse. Merton was keenly aware of technology's dangers to social stability. In a 1967 letter, he took aim at the universal myth that technology's infallibility makes everything in every way better for everyone. It does not. However, Merton was by no means a Luddite. Technology can indeed make a better world for millions of human beings, he wrote, yet there remained the nightmare of technology transforming the world into a more collectivist, cybernated mass culture. Decades before the first desktop, Merton foresaw a complete fragmentation of the nation's moral and spiritual fabric when people will begin basing all of their political and ethical decisions on computers and the voices from those computers. Well, and there we are. Prophetically, he wrote to a friend, just wait until they start philosophizing with computers. That was in 1967. He even foresaw technology becoming a means to elevate the slave of technology. Slaves of technology, yes, to satisfy narcissistic appetites for admiration and status. In other words, the woke social media. Merton said the greatest need of our time, by the way, he wrote this in Conjectures of a Guilty Bystander, ceases to clean out the enormous mass of mental and emotional rubbish that clutters our minds and makes us all political and social beings less. Without this house cleaning, however, we cannot begin to see, unless we cannot think. The purification must begin with the mass media. For this reason, we urgently need to penetrate the illusions of propaganda and popular falsehoods across the entire political spectrum, as well as the self-appointed pontificating Pharisees who are ushering a new socio-economic era where endless technological innovation has precedence over your life, all lives, nature's lives. Despite its newness, it has also been clearly predictable. No doubt, if Orwell were penning his great novel today, the emergence of this new America era we are witnessing would not be fiction. Back in a moment with your thoughts. Our talkback number, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Your time to call in and share your points of view. Oh, and by the way, from the environmental point of view, from EcoWatch, the world's oceans reached record temperatures last year. Despite all the other things that we were looking at, where there might be some cooling in some places, a new record was announced in a study published in Advances in Atmospheric Sciences, and this is the sixth year in a row that the ocean heat record has been broken. That's not good for the all of the species that live in the oceans. It's not good for the environment. It's going to create worse storms, higher storms, slower moving storms. And what we've already discussed on previous programs, the oceans are now creating so much moisture from the heat that we now have what is called rivers or lakes in the sky. Huge amounts of water that can drop on anyone at any point. Why we should pay attention to where we live, where it's sustainable, so we can make intelligent choices in our move forward. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I want to share now a article by Dr. Shabrah Jamil to a Dr. Harman. I think it's important because all of us would assume that in an open and free society that we have historically been, and are less so today, that anything that your physician could do to try to help you with your informed consent should be both ethical and legal. Whether it's efficacious is a different matter. We should always be open to another opinion, a second opinion, even a third opinion. But this is about political power to silence and penalize physicians who question certain views on COVID-19, an open letter to Dr. Harman and the American Medical Association. Here's what it says. And again, I'm going to take highlights from the article and quote them verbatim. But I want to give you an overview. It says, "Dear Dr. Harman, the very essence of traditional medical practice is open discourse and debate. Years of education and experience grant physicians the right to analyze data, question it, and demand answers. Any attempt to silence practitioners who are true to their profession is an egregious assault on their autonomy and undermines the doctor-patient relationship. The danger of creating a top-down authoritarian practice of medicine, such as the AMA, in collusion with the FSMB, is advocating would mean the end of a noble profession. In an ideal world, we expect societies and organizations that have been the vanguard of the medical profession to hold true to the ideals of medicine. In reality, we find many of these organizations to be compromised, having significant undisclosed conflicts of interest, which bring their impartiality into question. To use the trust built up over many years to declare that medical and scientific knowledge belongs only to them is an abuse of their position and a betrayal of the great responsibility. Misinformation and disinformation are nebulous terms created to cause confusion among lay people. In the world of science, there are facts, genuine opinions, and disingenuous lies. In the practice of medicine, lying is a crime, especially lying that results in harm. Your article, Flow of Damaging COVID Disinformation Must End Now, published on the American Medical Association website, December 14, 2021, feigns concern for the harm false information causes, not just in the health of the patients, but also to the doctor-patient relationship. This harm has been predefined as any concern, skepticism, challenge, or contradiction to official government narratives. However, many independent scientists and physicians worldwide analyzing real-time raw data are coming to conclusions which are not in alignment with the current agenda of medical and political authorities. We have a legal and ethical duty to speak out. In the article, you state, quote, "The COVID-19 pandemic continues to spawn falsehoods that are spread by a whole host of people, such as political leaders, media figures, internet influencers, and even some health professionals, including by licensed physicians." Well, the undersigned argue that organizations such as the AMA and the Federation of State Medical Boards are using their incorrectly claiming that the science, meaning interpretation of data, is fixed when the scientific evidence is critically reviewed in the light of long-standing medical ethical principles, it is the AMA and the Federation of State Medical Boards who appear to be creating false narratives and coercing the public into making medical decisions that are not in their best interest or in line with the accepted norms of evidence-based medicine and medical ethics. The studies you have cited showing the problem of disinformation are merely surveys you have conducted which express the opinions of those who responded. When this is compared with the available scientific evidence, grave concerns are raised about the AMA's role in informing the public with genuine and rigorous public health information and evidence. The AMA's consensus-based facts are in direct contradiction to the real facts becoming evident from close to 2 years of accumulated data. And it goes from there to talk about how it's the AMA and the CDC and the FDA and the World Health Organization that are the primary dispensers of misinformation, Anthony Fauci and the U.S. Public Health Service. And he is correct. In fact, a whole group of scientists signed this. But there's another part of this. Do any of you in this audience remember when there were ads in the Journal of the American Medical Association promoting cigarette smoking and different brands? In one, you had all these doctors in white coats and stethoscopes, you know, this cigarette that soothes your throat and calms your nerves. Then there was a promotion for Philip Morris, Lucky Strike, Marlboro's, and all of these cause severe injury, emphysema, heart disease, and cancer, and death. How many? There is no accurate figure. As close a guesstimate that I could find was over the last 100 years, about 10 million Americans minimal have died from the consequences of smoking. And yet, it was the Journal of the American Medical Association telling not only the readers, physicians, but then the physicians telling their patients, smoking's good for you. It wasn't. It was a lie. And the scientific community that had allowed itself to be hired to promote the lies, and there were many, every tobacco company had a whole list of scientists they could take up to Capitol Hill or to a state legislature and say smoking doesn't cause these diseases. And that's how they didn't have to lose a single lawsuit in nearly 100 years. In fact, it was only when a whistleblower came forward and gave to 60 Minutes, Mike Wallace, evidence and inside documents showing that the tobacco industry, all seven major tobacco industry representatives, knew all along that cigarette smoking caused addiction. The FDA knew that. It was in the proprietary information on its patent, and they kept that secret. So much for an FDA that cares more about public health than protecting the proprietary profits and patents of corporations. So everybody seemed to know, except the general public. They had to pay some massive fine over a long period of time, all of which was tax deductible, to reimburse Medicaid at the state level. Do you know nobody went to jail? Nobody lost their jobs. In fact, the value of the companies engaged in this crime against humanity increased. And for the AMA, this is particularly personal because I received a letter from the chairman of the board of the American Medical Association, which I published in a national magazine, challenging me on writing an article that showed the corruption inside the American Medical Association. So I simply wrote back and said, "Sir, if you can show me a single statement in my article that is inaccurate, I will correct it and apologize." Of course, there were no errors. It had been fact-checked multiple times. So what did they do? For 25 years, the American Medical Association had a secret department of investigations in the basement of the AMA headquarters in Chicago, And their sole mission was to destroy all competing medical or health modalities. The largest one was chiropractic. So they went after chiropractic with a passion. And someone leaked, to this day I don't know who it was, they leaked the documents of this attempt to destroy all alternative therapies. It gave a package left my doorman, several packages. I investigated it. I did a series of articles, and that led to a series of lawsuits, and the 12 largest medical organizations in America were sued, and they all lost. And it was upheld right up to the Supreme Court. So finally, the AMA had to acknowledge its error and apologize and recognize chiropractic. That's the same AMA that's still mouthing off today, dispensing misinformation, and is connected at the waist with the financial interests from the pharmaceutical industry. They're really something to be challenging those doctors who are challenging what's wrong with the current protocols on COVID. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.